Glendora, Mississippi is a quiet town of just a few hundred people in the heart of the Mississippi Delta. It's a poor town. 63% of the population lives below the federal poverty line. Glendora was also the town where Emmett Till was killed on August 28, 1955. A single purple sign marks Till's memory on the banks of the Tallahatchie River, where two boys found his gruesomely beaten 14-year-old body. And this week, that sign was defaced, pierced by bullets. But it's not the first time the memorial has been vandalized. In 2008, a year after the sign went up, it was stolen. And in 2016, the sign was also shot and riddled with more than a dozen bullets in multiple acts of vandalism. That's three times. Three times in a decade that a memorial to America's legacy of racial terror has been destroyed. Emmett Till's death was the hate crime that changed America. But how far have we really come since Emmett Till's death? This is The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega. And a year after Charlottesville, as Washington, D.C. prepares for the second Unite the Right rally this weekend, I'm turning to Heidi Beirich for what we know about the strength of hate groups and extremist organizations in this country. She's the director of the Southern Poverty Law Center's Intelligence Project.
The data shows that hate crimes are definitely up. Whether you look at city-level data that's been released recently, the trend on trend is that we have more hate crimes today than we did a year ago, and that trend goes back actually a couple of years past that. Also, the FBI's data shows that same upward tick. And, you know, the Southern Poverty Law Center started collecting information on hate and bias incidents right after the election in November of 2016. And just in the 10 days after the election, we collected information on a little bit more than 900 hate and bias incidents. And that's something that other civil rights groups have found as well, that same upward trend.
And just for our listeners, can you explain what exactly a hate crime is? How do you all define hate crimes?
Sure. Well, the definition is basically something that the FBI and the federal government have, drawn up, and then it's filtered into state-level legislation and laws as well. What a hate crime is any kind of crime, whether it's a property crime all the way up to murder, where the person who is the perpetrator has indicated some sort of hateful intent. For example, if they put a swastika on a synagogue, or if they're involved in an assault and they use slur words against a particular race or religion. That tells you that what you're looking at is a hate crime.
And we know that hate crimes can be targeted at many different groups, but are there specific groups that you've seen hate crimes against and an increase since the 2016 election?
Broadly, the two populations that have seen an uptick of hate crimes against them have been Muslims and immigrants. And that has been a finding that's found across the board. You know, that's indicated in the FBI's data, city data, our data, and other organizations, for example, like ProPublica, that have been collecting information. But I have to say, every single population of color and women have seen a rise in hate crimes against them, just not at the level of Muslims and immigrants.
And I want to talk a little bit about who's behind these hate crimes and what the psychology is, the end. I don't even know how to describe it. Is there a goal for these groups other than just sheer terror?
Well, terrorizing a population is certainly part of what a hate crime is. In general, hate crime perpetrators are young white males, and they're probably influenced by hateful propaganda that they're reading on the internet. I mean, Dylann Roof, who perpetrated that horrific shooting massacre in Charleston a few years ago, is a classic example of this. He was influenced by online propaganda put out by hate groups that told him that black people were rampaging and committing violent acts against white people, and he felt like he had to do something about that. That's a particularly horrific example of something, but many times hate crimes are inspired in exactly the same way. And the way they're different than other crimes is that everybody in that community becomes fearful when they're targeted. In other words, if I'm robbed, that's a tragedy for me and a horrible thing for me. But if I'm robbed because I'm Jewish or because I'm African American, that's something that strikes fear in that entire population in that area. And that makes them particularly pernicious types of crimes.
I want to go back to what you said about the examples you gave about white men in particular being influenced by what they're seeing on the internet and perhaps other rhetoric. You know, we're in 2018. All of us have taken similar history classes about the history of the United States. And so this idea that young Americans, or maybe not all young, but the folks who are being influenced, why are they so easily influenced?
Well, unfortunately, we live in an era in which there isn't just a god-awful amount of propaganda online that young people can access that goes from, you know, conspiracy theories and lies to just nasty hate propaganda. And one of the problems with algorithms, online algorithms, is they tend to feed us more of what we look at first. So what you have, this definitely happened with Dylann Roof, is you sort of, you get someone online, they start looking at some kind of ugly propaganda, and they just get dished out more and more and more of that. In other words, there's almost a radicalization process that occurs once you start going down a rabbit hole of hate online. And that makes, you know, 2018 and recent years very different than the 1990s, where it was really hard actually to find this kind of information. But nowadays, in 2 seconds online, you can be introduced to all kinds of ugly material, both on mainstream platforms, places like Reddit or Facebook, and also on, you know, big hate sites like stormfront.org. And I think that's a big factor when it comes to spreading white supremacist ideas among young people.
Also, I think the word that you used, radicalized, is one that, in particular, the media has often only used to describe, and politicians have only used to describe, terrorism that comes from outside of the United States. That word, to radicalize young Americans, is often, we don't put those two things together, and in fact, that seems to be exactly what's happening.
This is a very, I think, serious situation when it comes to journalism, actually. You know, when somebody is influenced by ISIS in exactly the same way, watching YouTube videos, for example, being tweeted at, and then, you know, some act of domestic terrorism occurs, we see this all as a pattern, right? We say, well, those people who committed that violence were influenced by a pernicious ideology, some sort of extremist form of Islam. But when it comes to young white men who are influenced by white supremacy, we treat the instances of violence as though they're one-offs, like they're not connected. But the truth is that white supremacist ideology is just as pernicious in terms of producing violence as something coming from Al-Qaeda or ISIS. But for some reason, we are very reluctant to see that pattern. I surmise sometimes that it's because white supremacy is indigenous, right? It was born with this country. And, you know, ISIS is a foreign entity. We can see that as coming in. It has nothing to do with our society. But white supremacy is a bedrock of our history. We are producing and have produced historically the thinking that can lead to this violence. And we seem very reluctant to see that as a pattern.
We're talking about the state of hate and extremist organizations in the United States as we head into what could be a very tense weekend in Washington, D.C., with Heidi Beirich of the Southern Poverty Law Center. Heidi, let's turn to what's happening in D.C. this weekend. The Unite the Right rally, organized by Jason Kessler, is planning for their second rally. These were the same folks that did the rally last year in Charlottesville, which we will be commemorating this week. Who is Jason Kessler, and what do we know about this Unite the Right organization or group?
Sure. Jason Kessler's a somewhat interesting figure. He started his politics actually on the left with like the Occupy movement, and then he moved to the hard right, and he made his way through some conservative publications like Daily Caller. He wrote for them for a while, and then eventually came to the position of supporting white supremacy, basically, the idea that whites are under attack, they're suffering from some sort of genocide, and we need to stand up for their rights. You know, the rally this weekend in D.C. is called, you know, a rally for white civil rights, this idea that white people are under attack and are somehow being victimized in the current environment. I will say, though, that the fallout from the rallies last year, the Charlottesville rallies, have left the players that were involved there in a much more muted stance. We don't expect Kessler to have that many people showing up in D.C. because it hasn't really gone very well in the last year for those who were at the rallies last year.
Now, does that run the risk of pushing these groups further into the margins? Is it helpful to see who these people are and know who they are? I just feel like there's so many people whose jaws are dropping just to think that here we are 1 year later and we're having another rally about something that I think most Americans would agree they'd rather not see.
Sure. I mean, that's true. And there have been other rallies. There was a rally last weekend in Portland by a group called the Proud Boys, which is rabidly Islamophobic, for example. I mean, this Kessler rally this weekend is actually the third of the summer that has been about racism and white supremacy. And I know Americans may be surprised by this, but we have a hate movement in this country that has been growing for some time. And I'm not just talking about in the last couple of years. The Southern Poverty Law Center collects information on hate groups every year. And we've seen a sustained rise basically since the year 2000 in those organizations. We've also seen huge growth in web presence on hate sites. For example, the Daily Stormer, which is a big neo-Nazi site that's been connected to domestic terrorism, they have about 450,000 unique page views a month. And that's big. And that is an audience that grew from almost nothing about 4 or 5 years ago to those numbers. And you'll find the same thing across other hate sites. So this movement is burgeoning in the current environment. It's growing. And I know most Americans are horrified by that. But what we saw in Charlottesville last year, what we've seen in Portland over the last couple months, are indicators that, you know, we have a serious white supremacy problem still in this country today, even though most people think that couldn't be possible in 2018.
So let's talk a little bit about, more broadly, the rise of white supremacy thinking and or maybe not the rise, but the outing of white supremacists in the United States and the influence that these folks are starting to have in our public policy. We're seeing candidates for political office, including Corey Stewart, who won the Virginia Republican Senate primary. What do you have to say about that? I mean, obviously, these folks have enough support to be voted in.
Yes, this is perhaps the scariest thing that's been happening over the last couple of years. I mean, it's one thing when these groups are way on the fringes, but it's another thing when candidates, as you describe, are picking up their themes and running for office on them. And, you know, the big thing here, frankly, is Donald Trump. Donald Trump has played footsie with these folks. He's tweeted out horrible things like his descriptions of African countries and Haiti, anti-Muslim videos from a hate group in England. And he's put in policies that people on the radical right, regardless of how, you know, Charlottesville impacted them, are very, very happy about. The Muslim ban is a great example. They don't want Muslims in this country. They believe that Muslims are inherently evil or terroristic. The immigration policies that we're having, whether it's the child separations, the ICE raids and whatnot, these are ideas that people on the fringes of the right have been pushing for aggressively for decades. I mean, people sometimes don't understand that David Duke, the former Klan leader and a major anti-Semite who was at Charlottesville but won't be showing up in D.C., he was talking about a border wall decades ago. So we have seen ideas that were truly fringe when it comes to immigration make their way from the bizarrest section of the furthest part of the right and now actually become policy. And that is something that impacts millions.
We've also seen, so I do want to mention a statistic here that I thought was pretty stunning. 9% of Americans in a survey from ABC News and Washington Post last August said it was acceptable to hold neo-Nazi or white supremacist views. In other words, 22 million Americans, as of this poll last August, said that was okay. Is that, in your estimation, pretty much where we've always been? Or is this something that more Americans are more comfortable being open about?
Well, I found those poll results stunning as well. And I actually think it indicates that there is less of a reluctance to admit to extremist views on race. I mean, the idea that people would say it's okay to be a neo-Nazi is just shocking to me, given what happened in Nazi Germany. And I think that those poll results, and when you extrapolate them out, as you indicated, to 20-plus million Americans, show that we have a rising radicalization in racial and and anti-Semitic views in this country. And, you know, it used to be that people just, even if they harbored these views in private, they would not say things in public that we are hearing in public today. And I think it shows a great coarsening and a backsliding, frankly, on racial justice issues in the country.
Now, we are seeing lots and lots and lots of viral videos across the country, everything from Barbecue Becky's on, you know, to the examples of, you know, that we saw here in New York, Adam, a lawyer who was yelling at Latinos for speaking Spanish. It seems to be that the penalty, at least, for is a social shaming, right? Are these folks losing their jobs for et cetera. But I mean, does that really solve anything? To me, it feels like it's a temporary fix that makes the internet feel good, but it doesn't really get at the core of the problem.
Well, I mean, I agree with you. You know, I'm glad when these things are brought to attention, obviously, for the person who's been sort of, you know, completely unfairly victimized and pointed out. But the truth is this country really needs to have a frank conversation about race and its impact. You know, we're not like Germany that actually went through a national effort to evaluate what happened during the Nazi era. You know, we had a civil war in the 1800s that basically the South lost, but discrimination against African Americans by law, right, Jim Crow and so on, just continued. And we just really haven't had that reckoning in this country about what people of color face. And these examples keep popping up, and we obviously know that there are many, many more of them than just what we become aware of. And we need to really confront this issue. We need to confront white supremacy, reject these ideas, cleanse the political system of them, and try to get on the right path here, because it's just grossly unfair. And we are, you know, this country is going to be a majority-minority population in just, you know, a couple decades. So we can't have this kind of race hate going on a regular basis if we want to have a real strong democracy in the future.
Heidi Beirich is director of the Southern Poverty Law Center's Intelligence Project. Heidi, thanks for your insights.
I really appreciate being on.
Okay, now it's your turn. We know hate crimes are on the rise nationally, but have you seen a change in your community, for good or for bad, since the Charlottesville rally of a year ago?
Hi, this is Eric from Omaha, Nebraska. Although there have been some random acts of, inappropriate behavior, to say the very least, vandalism of some mosques in the area and also swastikas left at random parks, I would say the town in general here, the city, is very inclusive and has become more inclusive as a result of that.
Hi, this is Kate. I live an hour away from Charlottesville in Harrisonburg, Virginia. I was an anti-racism activist before the Unite the Right rally. Altogether, we're unified against Kessler and his ilk, but we still recognize that the racism is all over this region. And if we're honest with ourselves, it's everywhere in America.
We want to keep hearing from you. Tell us whether your community is different now than it was a year ago. Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE or tweet us at The Takeaway.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.